So as I mentioned in the announcements, we typically, tonight we had scheduled a teaching in our teaching series, Spiritual Inventory 1. It's a two-part series, so it's like a cliffhanger, so you have to come back, so make sure you erase your calendars for next week and be here. But I decided late last night to mix it up. Since it is St. Patrick's Day, and since we only gather on a Wednesday St. Patrick's Day, I don't know, every 6 or 7 years, depending on leap years and all that, and I thought, God just put on my heart that St. Patrick has a pretty interesting story about redemption, and that's what recovery is all about, really. It's about how God is redeeming us and our afflictions. And so I thought, I'm going to move the inventory teaching to next week, so we'll kind of keep our schedule. So here's the bad news. You get me 3 weeks in a row, so you may want to seek counseling or get yourself ready for that. But good news is we'll do something a little bit different, mix it up. And I do like to do that from time to time. I am a product of CR, and I was just talking to a friend of mine out in the parking lot talking about a lot of recovery, and a lot of our faith is submitting to the process. But every now and then I want to mix that up. So I want to do that tonight, and hopefully you'll indulge me and get something out of this. About two, three years ago, I was sitting down with one of the pastors here, Pastor Marty Brown, and he said, "I got this book I want to read with you." As I have shared with some of you, I'm a pretty new Christian, although my wife says I can't say that anymore because it's been like 8 or 10 years. I don't know when that wears off. It's kind of like when you go from months to years with your kids. They're 18 months, but they're not 46 months or whatever. But anyway, came to Christ late in life, let's put it that way. And I have a little bit of a warped view on the world, and that's good sometimes, it's bad sometimes. And so I got this book I want you to read with me. It's called Sacrilege, because he said, I think this fits you to a T. You're a pretty sacrilegious guy. And I just want to read a little bit. This was written by a pastor, used to be here in Portland, named Hugh Halter. And I think now he's out of Denver, Colorado. And this is kind of what caught Marty. It says, "Sacrilege exposes the patterns of thinking that have held the church hostage for years and inspires you to rethink the way you understand scripture, family, spiritual formation, conversion, church, sin, and more. Your faith may never be the same, and that is a good thing." I'm not here to plug this book. I just want to give you the genesis of where this came about. In the book here, though, when he was working in Portland, Hugh Halter, that is, every St. Patrick's Day, for many years, you would find him down at Kell's Irish Pub downtown. And he got to know the staff down there. And it got to be a tradition that on St. Patrick's Day, at a certain point in the evening, with the revelry and all that going on and the green beer flowing and all that, that he would get up in center stage and he would recount the story of St. Patrick, kind of give a little bit of his life. Because, and especially the way he would do it, a little more colorful and exciting than I'll do it tonight. But this is my first time. I haven't been doing this all this. But just as a way to reach out to those that may not be, a way to kind of share the gospel, if you will, in an environment and in a time and with a story that a lot of people said, wow, I didn't know that. That St. Patrick's a pretty cool guy. And so that's what got me thinking about it. That's kind of the genesis of tonight. And so that's I want to kind of take a little bit of a page out of Hugh's book, not this one, but just his book of life, and share with you a little bit about St. Patrick. So first, and also kind of what can we take from his life and how can we apply that to our faith walk and our recovery walk? I guess that's the tie-in here. So first, to dispel any myths, and maybe you know this already, but St. Patrick was not Irish. He was actually born in Britain, and yet he's the patron saint of Ireland. And so a lot of people make that mistake. He was born in Britain around 386 AD. His father was a deacon in the Roman Catholic Church. However, some reports that I read, that was more of a financial decision than a spiritual decision. But father was a deacon. His grandfather was actually a minister as well. So he grew up pretty steeped in religion. But he did not take that religion or that faith seriously. It was just part of the mix there. In other words, he did not own his faith. And I think that's the first thing that I want to kind of draw our attention to tonight is just reflecting on yourselves and asking yourself or reaffirming in yourself that you do own your faith. One of the benefits of coming to Christ late in life as I did is I did not have the baggage that I hear about sometimes either in testimonies here or just in talking with folks in the church body of those that grew up in a religious household, but that religious household's view of God or view of church or view of faith was a little bit skewed and even kind of misdirected them in their relationship or lack thereof with God. So the good part is I didn't have that baggage. The bad news is I missed out on a relationship with Jesus for 46 years. So it does have its consequence. And so one of the things that I think we see just early on in St. Patrick's life is he didn't own his faith. It was his dad's faith. It was his grandfather's faith. He didn't have a relationship, a personal relationship with Jesus at that point in time in his early life. Now, Patrick, and I'm going to call him Patrick. You read history out there, and I don't think that was his given name, but we'll call him Patrick or St. Patrick for tonight's teaching. He lived in a transformational period in world history. So he was born at the tail end of the Roman Empire, and the Roman Empire would continue to decline throughout his life, eventually, you know, completely collapsing, I think a little bit after his death, but right around that time. And Britain at the time was part of the Roman Empire. That was kind of the northern extent of the Roman Empire, or it's one of its northernmost extents of the Roman Empire. If we kind of look at Rome down there in central Italy, it's kind of the epicenter, and then it's expanding out around the Mediterranean. It had reached all the way up into Britain by that time. But being that the empire was on the decline, they were not the power that they used to be, there were various clans and raiders attacking the power, the great power of Rome, and they were winnowing it away. And so kind of the farther you got away from Rome, the more likely you were to encounter different thinking and different control, or a lack of Roman control, if that matter, just because it had gotten so big and so bloated that they could not exert their control over this massive empire any longer. So Britain being at that northern end, they were right on the border where you had a number of different bands, the Goths and the Visigoths and Druids and various other groups or clans of folks that were basically overturning the empire. And so at the age of 16, so maybe what, a sophomore in high school or something, Patrick, minding his own business, is kidnapped by pirates, of all things. And I don't know if it was pirates because they were taking him to Ireland, which is an island. And at that time, there was, of course, no channel, hovercraft, airplanes, things like that. So you were going to get to Ireland, you were going to swim, or you were going to use a boat. So he was kidnapped by pirates. And he was taken to Ireland, and he was enslaved there in central part of Ireland. Sold into slavery to a Druid prince. So just imagine that. You're a sophomore roughly in high school, and all of a sudden you're kidnapped by pirates and are taken to an island in a culture that's vastly different than what you grew up in. And he was probably in upper middle class life, and so now he's a slave in a foreign land. And so I think this is the second thing I want to touch on, or I know this is the second thing I want to touch on. When we look at St. Patrick's life, it reminds us that life doesn't always go the way it's supposed to go. I say that often in my testimony. I wasn't supposed to be an alcoholic. I wasn't supposed to be in a 12-step recovery group. You know, that was the way Jack thought. Of course, I wasn't supposed to believe in God either. That was for those loonies out there that needed a crutch or whatever. But life doesn't go the way we think it's supposed to go. And of course, St. Patrick got a rude awakening to that fact at the age of 16. He spent 6 years in slavery, there herding cattle and pigs, kind of being a shepherd, but not getting paid for it. And of his time as a slave, historian Thomas Cahill writes, he had two constant companions, nakedness and hunger. And so this was not a happy life that he had. In fact, I almost titled this teaching St. Patrick, Naked and Afraid, but then I thought that might go too far. But then again, I'm sacrilegious, so what the hey. But nakedness and hunger is kind of, you know, two things that reach out. That's not a thing that we want to look back in a period or a season in our life and say that's something that we want to share in. But as a result of these harsh conditions, he learned to pray constantly. He began to own his faith. He began to have a very personal relationship with Christ in hardship. And I think that's an obvious parallel to many of us, if not all of us in the room, of how we turn to God when there is no place else to turn. And what a lot of us are in recovery for, I know myself, is turning to God because he's God, not because I need something or I'm naked or I'm hungry, okay? But incorporating him into my life throughout all instances. St. Patrick wrote himself, in later years he wrote, "I was employed," meaning he was tasked with, "every day in feeding cattle, and often in the day I used to betake myself to prayer. And the love of God thus grew stronger and stronger. In a single day I could utter as many as 100 prayers, and at night almost as many." And that word "utter" is important because when St. Patrick prayed, he was praying out loud. It wasn't just this internal dialogue that I have all the time with God, and sometimes the enemy trying to horn in there. But he was in the habit of praying out loud, talking to God out loud. So when he says he uttered as many as 100 prayers, that's a lot of talking to God. And I think that this shows us another thing, or something else we can take from St. Patrick's life, is he shows us the power of prayer. Because what's interesting in what he wrote there to me is that the more he prayed, the more his love grew for God. And I think about my prayer life, and I think about how often it's a list of things I need done, or things that I want to make my life the way it's supposed to be. And instead of developing the relationship and really falling in love and refalling in love with God. And I think that's something that if we just engage in more of that kind of prayer, then we will see our love for God grow, and then we will see the desire to pray even more. It kind of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So just on prayer for a moment, just some of the things that I want to look at. Love for God is the best motivation to pray. It was his love for God that fueled St. Patrick's prayer life, not a desire to convince God to give him something, not a sense of obligation to fulfill, not to try to prove to him that he was worthy of God's love and forgiveness. It was out of just sheer love for God, and that love grew because he developed that relationship. He just wanted to spend time communicating because he just loved being in God's company, in other words. Prayer is something that I think something else we take away is that it's always a good time to pray. Whether you're naked and hungry, or whether you're driving down I-5, or whether you're sitting in the backyard with a smile on your face enjoying your kids or your grandkids interacting, it's always a good time to pray. So not just at night, not just when we get up and have our quiet time, those are all things too, but in all situations, in every situation, when it's calm, when it's tumultuous. And finally, I think it shows us that we should be open to God's answers. And this is something I'm very bad at. Do a lot of talking, not a lot of listening to God is the way that my prayer life works. And so in St. Patrick's prayer rhythm and prayer life, he was attuned to listening to God as well, to hearing those answers, even if they were surprising, or even if they didn't take him where he thought they were going to take him. One example of this would be a dream that he has from God as a result of this relationship. And God says, basically, I want you to leave. I want you to run away from these captors. I want you to travel to the coast. I want you to get on a boat. One will be waiting for you. Don't worry. Okay. He probably didn't talk just like that, but let's just say that's how it sounded. So that's all fine and dandy if you live on the coast, but he didn't. Remember, he's in the central part of Ireland. So it's as if God, in a dream to you tonight, said, hey, what I need you to do is leave everything tomorrow and walk up to Seattle, because it's about 200 miles to the coast. want you to walk up Seattle and catch a ferry. There'll be one waiting for you. Okay? Listening to God, loving God, trusting God, he did just that. He walked to the coast. And while there was not a ship with a banner on it saying, "Welcome, St. Patrick, we have booked steerage for you here," but he was able to finagle his way onto a boat and eventually was able to sail back to Britain and eventually was able to reunite with his family. Now, due to his captivity, those 6 years in Ireland, kind of during, let's say, 16 to 22, roughly, he, of course, missed out on any kind of formal education. That was not part of the slave plan up there. Although he did spend time later studying for the priesthood, he lacked what's called the classical training of his contemporaries. And as a result of that, he had to rely on a different skill set as he went out eventually and became a missionary. So he did not rely on, let's say, classical oration, giving great sermons, if you will, or the philosophical side of theology. He employed what I'll call a very practical theology, a theology grounded in a strong prayer life, and that prayer life would serve him well as he eventually did the unthinkable, and that is to return to the land that had enslaved him. And just think about that. After being treated that way, living that lifestyle, he says, "I think I'll go back and minister to these folks." That's how much he loved God and wanted to share the good news with this pretty much pagan society that Ireland was at the time. So St. Patrick teaches us that he impressed, as he did this, as he went back on his missionary journey to Ireland, he had a tough nut to crack. And I think one of the parallels and one of the reasons why Hugh Halter would go down to Kells is because I don't think it's any secret. We live in a pretty secular part of the country. And your average crowd at Kells on any night, let alone St. Patrick's, is probably not all about hearing the gospel message. That's not why they went out for green beer that night. And so Patrick encountered that he knew he would encounter that. And so he was about relating to the culture, but maintaining the truths of his faith, of God, of Jesus. And one of the things that was an open door for him, or a way in, was his prayer life. Because even though they disagreed with the concept initially of a one God idea, you had Druid shaman and you had pagan kings that were both very impressed with his prayer life, with his intensity and passion and love for this God. And so they actually respected him because they were spiritual as well. They just were not believers at that point in time. And so I think that's one of the key things that St. Patrick's life teaches us, is that all people, as far as I'm concerned, I happen to believe this, all people are on a spiritual journey. Whether they are of a different religion, whether they're of no religion or faith, all people are on a spiritual journey. And I believe St. Patrick realizes, he saw the temples, he saw the various gods they prayed to, the various symbols, the various idols. So he knew this was a spiritual people. And that's a good thing. It's, I think, much harder to try to bring the good news of Jesus to people that aren't even open to this idea that there's something beyond themselves. So he met people where they were, okay? And you can always, and then that allows you to share the good news in a relational manner. And I think oftentimes as followers of Christ, we can find ourselves in a confrontational situation when we're sharing Christ. And St. Patrick said, "No, I'm going to do that in a relational sense." Let me just give you two examples of that. One is the and I'll be open here. this is not what I saw varying feedback on this out there when I was doing research. So I'm not saying this is fact. You could put this as maybe legend, okay? But we can dispel the whole driving the snakes away. That wasn't him. It wasn't the leprechauns and all that type of stuff. That's not that St. Patrick. He didn't drink green beer all the time. And we already talked about he wasn't even Irish. But these I think I could believe that there was some validity to us just knowing how his missionary and his style of evangelism. So the Celtic cross, and I asked him to throw a picture of that up on the screen here. You might be familiar with that image called the Celtic cross. There are some folks that attribute the Celtic cross to St. Patrick, and what the Celtic cross is that circle represents the sun. Because the pagans and the Druids both worshiped the sun. In fact, they were both very into worshiping the natural world, okay? And so he knew, St. Patrick knew, that all of the natural world comes from God. All is created by God. So he took one of their symbols, the sun, and he superimposed the cross on it, okay? To kind of give them I can kind of see that because that's one of my symbols I'm familiar with. In other words, he was sensitive to the fact that they were on that spiritual journey. They were maybe halfway there, okay, but they weren't all the way there. And so he wanted to shift them from worshiping something that was created, like the sun, to the Creator. So who created that sun? And so he melded those two images in what's called the Celtic cross. Another example of this idea of meeting people where they are would be this symbol right here, the shamrock, or the three-leaf clover. Once again, legend has it that as he was trying to explain, or as he was explaining the Trinity to his audience of pagans, which is hard enough for all of us believers to get our heads around, he would ask them, a clover leaf, how many leaves does it have, one or three? And they would respond, both. And they're right. And that's the Trinity, Father, the Son, the Spirit, all in one, three leaves being one. So he would use something that was very familiar to them to try to convey that no, it is possible, because your mind first goes, no, that can't be. Three people in one, come on, wait a minute. And then you think about that, yeah, okay, I can get that. So those were some of the things as far as meeting them where they were, using their love, appreciation, worship of the created world, of the natural world, to draw them to the Creator instead of just stopping with worshiping what it was that was creative. So as I wrap up tonight, I just want to kind of touch on, I guess, four things in addition to what I've already talked about as far as his parallels into our lives here that I think St. Patrick's life, when we look at, and there's a whole lot more to his story, and as I say, I'm sure Hugh Halter would make it much more exciting than I did, but four things that we can look at that St. Patrick, his life reminds us. And one is that we can trust God with our days. We can trust him with our days. Psalm 31:15 says, my times are in your hand. Rescue me from the hand of my enemies and from my persecutors. And of course, he lived that. Number two, we can trust that God will bring purpose through even the darkest of times. In Romans 8:28, scripture we look at from time to time here, it says, and we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. We can trust that he's going to bring purpose through even the darkest of times. And that's St. Patrick's story, really, if we were to summarize it up. A third thing that a look at his life should bring to mind is we can trust that God's sovereignty and his power is over everything. And I had to really spend a lot of time on that concept in 2020, the year 2020, as it seemed like everything was going awry. And I was looking to man-made institutions and solutions for, I think, a spiritual illness, honestly. And I had to remind myself that this is not a surprise to God. This God is over all of this. God has all of this. And I can imagine that as St. Patrick matured in his faith, as he's out there enslaved, far away from his life and his family and all that, that was a comfort to him, knowing that that God's got this. And I'm going to keep talking to him a lot to make sure, so to speak, in all this prayer. And finally, we can be assured that God's presence is always with us, and that his plan for us is ultimately always good. Okay. Now, I have a phrase that I incorporate. I can't remember where I heard it, but I agree with it. And it's this idea of that I know God's plan for me is good. And I know that in the end, it all works out, okay, the way God wants it to, the way God will have it. The problem with me is that my solution, the way I think it should work out and the way he thinks it should work out, whether that's a big thing or a small thing, are often vastly different, okay? So I know he's got it, and it's okay. Everything's okay in the end. I just don't know if I'm okay with it being okay. You know, some of that is where I get caught up. Now, we can be assured that God's presence is always with us and his plans for us are good. That doesn't mean that we're always going to get what we want. It doesn't mean that there's not going to be hardship. It doesn't mean that there's not going to be tough times. It just means that ultimately, and even through those tough times, there is a plan. God has a plan. I read a quote that kind of summarized St. Patrick made this kind of transformation from what was a normal life at the time when he's 15 or so years of age to all of a sudden that life radically changing at 16. A woman by the name of Rachel Dawson, I think she's a historian or maybe a theologian, she writes this, she says, about St. Patrick and God. She said, "But it pleased God to bring him, St. Patrick, to a better mind by the way of affliction." And I really like that, because I think that's what Celebrate Recovery is. It is God bringing us to a better mind, but there's a little affliction involved, okay? We talk about it every week. We pray it every week in the Serenity Prayer, one of my favorite passages, accepting hardship as a pathway to peace. That's just another way of saying that. But I just liked the way that it pleased God. Not that he was happy, not that he was causing the affliction, but just the idea that if that was God's will, that's God's will is God's will. And that we are going to have affliction and we are going to have hardship, but God has a plan and we can trust in that. So as we resume our teaching series, our regular teaching series next week with our lesson on spiritual inventory, think about that. Let me just read some of St. Patrick in his own words here. I forget, he wrote a couple of works, and I can't remember which one this was in. But this is St. Patrick writing about his time in Ireland. He says, "It was there that the Lord brought me to a sense of, brought me to a sense of the unbelief of my heart." So we might call that a come to Jesus moment. Okay, but I like the way he phrased that. "It was there that he brought me to a sense of the unbelief in my heart, that I might call my sins to remembrance and to turn with all my heart to the Lord, who regarded my low estate and, taking pity on my youth and ignorance, watched over me before I knew him, or had sense to discern between good and evil, and counseled me and comforted me as a father does a son or a daughter." And so as we move further into our spiritual inventory teachings over the next couple of weeks, 3 week or so period, 2 week actually, we're going to go two in a row, that idea of "might call my sins to remembrance" stood out to me as I read that, because that's part of our inventory process. And that's what God wanted. So as we are getting ready to write that out and then eventually share that with someone we trust and with God, I would pray that you would call those sins to remembrance as you do that, to get that out and to get that into the light. And so as they say, as we resume our teaching series in the next couple of weeks on spiritual inventory, just kind of thinking about that idea of owning our faith, that idea of as we are out there, and you know, I talk about St. Patrick, meeting people where they are, that's another thing that this ministry is founded on. You don't need to have it all together. You don't even need to be a believer. Okay, I certainly wasn't when I came through those doors. But we're going to meet you where you are. And we're not going to fix you. We're going to support you. We're not going to make everything better. Okay, we're just going to be there and in community meeting you where you are. And so I have a couple of questions that you can use if you want in your small groups tonight or not. Normally with a teaching, we have a focus question. So I'm going to throw a couple out for you as usual. Let whatever flows from your heart in small group time flow from your heart. But one of the things you might want to think about is when you reflect on St. Patrick and his affinity for prayer and how prayer changed his life, changed his relationship, changed his mission in Ireland, how's your prayer life? What's that look like? And kind of maybe meditate and perhaps share on that, what that looks like. Are you like me and sometimes praying more for what you need rather than to fall in love with God? So just some ideas. Another question you might want to look at is, how has God redeemed your afflictions in order to better your mind and your heart? Okay. This is a program of redemption. We take those afflictions, we get them out in the open, and God uses those. Step 12, we just read tonight. I love that very piece of truth that's right at the beginning, having had a spiritual experience as a result of these steps, this program, talking to one another, small group, step studies. That's what this program is about. So how has God taken your afflictions and used them to better your mind and your heart?